This is Boots Riley from the coup. And whenever I'm running from the police, I gotta find out where to go. I listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
The range, it's a high concept design. It's full of rocks, it's a mountaintop, and clouds go rolling by. Got Alpine cuisine, I saw limousines, and it's full of guys. Just look and you can see it. You can watch the city die. Say we got new bosses, it's enough to make you cry. But once there was a mural, there's an ad designer here. The city that I knew was gone, the city is for sale. Apartments on the condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Yuppies take the south side, and the city goes to hell.
Yeah, welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. An unusual beginning, but that's what we're starting with today. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org. We still have no computer, no transmitter site, so we are on the stream, but not on the air, which is a pity. And hopefully we will be getting back on the air in about 3 or 4 weeks, because we may have found a spot. But if you have suggestions as to where we might put up our transmitter antenna, like the second story of a house or a tree in a yard, any place, preferably actually on the east side, out toward Live Oak, but anywhere in Santa Cruz is a possibility. Give a call to my phone number, 423-4833, and I'll pass it on to the collective. That's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, which is also a line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group that I work with and write about and sign on to and so forth. In the studio with me this evening, I have a special guest, Rebecca, also known as Bertha G. Hey, Rebecca, say hello.
Hello.
Say hello again.
Hello.
Okay, let's see if we got you there. So, and for a third time, say hello.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Try to adjust that mic. Now, Rebecca, I ran into you a few days ago, and, you know, you talked about your life, in turn part of your life, which had to do with being outside, or at least having to survive in a vehicle, which is housing for a number of people in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And you are out of that at the present time, or you're still struggling? What's happening with that?
No, I'm out of the car at the present
time. Got to have iron hands to deal with these microphones. Sorry for the delay, folks. Let's see now. So you are, how long were you in a vehicle?
Well, in the past 3 years, I've been in my vehicle five different times.
Wow.
And the fifth time was the longest period of time. It was 8 months.
And this was all in Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Yes.
What prompted these vehicular excursions?
Well,
if you wish to.
Yeah, I've been in Santa Cruz for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up here after college in 1998 and became like one of the first Pilates instructors in the area back then.
And explain for all us somewhat less familiar folks what a Pilates instructor is.
It is an instructor of a technique called Pilates, spelled P-I-L-A-T-E-S, that was the name of the man who developed it and invented it, basically all the exercises and the techniques behind it, back in World War I with the bedridden soldiers and whatnot. I became certified to teach it to other people.
What is it exactly?
It's a it's a fitness technique.
So it's for health and improving your strength.
It's yes, exactly. So anyways, you know, I've been pushed out of Santa Cruz a couple of times over the past 20 years. There was a time, the very first time that it happened, there was about 10 of my friends that were also being evicted from their apartments so that the rents could be raised and rented to richer people.
Has this been a kind of a pattern as to why on each of these five occasions you found yourself homeless have been a raising of the rents?
No, this particular time in the past 3 years was not because of the rents were already so raised. The biggest problem was that the jobs that I was having at the time, which I did enjoy as a direct support professional and a caregiver, they only pay minimum wage. And honestly, 3 years ago, when I started, I was only making $8.25 an hour. And then finally, the minimum wage went up to $10 an hour. And so since then, over the past year, I've definitely been looking for jobs that are even more than $13 an hour, because I have to work an incredible amount of overtime in order to still make any kind of significant money to be able to put a deposit down on a place to live.
Well, I think you mentioned you did some house cleaning work as well recently that may have tired you out today, right?
Yes, that is my recent current job, is house cleaning.
What does that pay?
It's starting at $15 an hour.
And what does that take out of you, or what satisfaction, if maybe, I wouldn't know if I'd use that word, but does it give any satisfaction to you, or is it simply, the need to make the rent?
It is, number one, the need to make the rent, because it would not be at all what I would, I was a Pilates instructor for years and years, and I went through some certain situations that actually affected my health, my blood pressure, and I been taking off the last 3 years from putting any effort into gaining any Pilates clientele, and trying to heal myself and get my blood pressure down. So.
Now, is that a big thing in Santa Cruz? Is Pilates something that a number of people are looking for instruction in?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, because I haven't really put much time into finding out. When I first started 20 years ago, I put a couple flyers up, and in a month, I had a full schedule working out of my home. And things are much different now. It's gone through this big boom, and, there's Pilates studios almost on every corner. And I was away for a little while. It was one of those times I got pushed away and tried to find a home and a job elsewhere because Santa Cruz was too expensive. It really... It ended up 6.5 years later, I came back. Because even though places rent might be a little less expensive elsewhere, at the time that this happened, too, it was like 2007, I think, when almost everybody's home was going into foreclosure. And
Commander.
Yes, come in, number one. Sit down.
I understand we're under a planetary emergency. Is this about that?
Yes, number one. Central Command at Small World Radio has ordered us to the safest possible location and to begin transmitting the truth to the agents of love around the world. Apparently, everyone is being activated and are prepared to save the world.
Yes, sir, Commander. Shall we broadcast on our pirate transmitter at Freak Radio 101.3 in Santa Cruz?
Precisely, number one. And throw the switch on worldwide internet.
Smallworldradio.net. Got it.
Listen, number one, this isn't going to be easy. It's the heaviest task anyone is ever going to ask of you.
Just name it, Commander. The future of humanity is at stake.
Precisely, number one. Before you sound the alarm, I want you to calm yourself. Find your center and pull up your feminine side. Now take a deep breath. We're going in.
This is very noisy, but it's wonderful to be back in Santa Cruz. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global and embedded independent international investigative news hour. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz on 101.3 FM, the first radio station in Santa Cruz that broadcasts Democracy Now! FRSC has been liberating the airways since 1995. Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah, this is Democracy Now!
I have spoken as recently as 24 hours ago with people at the highest level of intelligence, and I asked them the question, does it work? Does torture work? And the answer was yes, absolutely.
In his first television interview as president, Donald Trump openly backs the use of torture. This comes as he prepares to take executive action that could lead to the reopening of secret overseas CIA prisons. He's also moving forward on building a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border.
The Secretary of Homeland Security, working with myself and my staff, will begin immediate construction of a border wall.
We'll look at Trump's executive actions and the growing resistance to his policies, then to a Sundance exclusive. Here in Park City, as Jay-Z premieres his new docuseries, Time, the Khalif Browder story, about a teenager who ultimately commits suicide after being jailed at Rikers for 3 years without trial, most of that time in solitary confinement, I asked Jay-Z whether Rikers should close.
Well, if anything like that is happening, one if that happens.
And coming next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Today is January 26, 2017. I hope you'll join me for 2 hours of look-backs over the last week or two and sometimes pungent comments and sometimes interesting voices. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
A little tangled here tonight, but we're going to straighten it out. The phone number here, if you want to call in with updates or critiques or additions or subtractions from the show, is 427-3772. This is a two-hour show concerning civil rights and political dissent in Santa Cruz, hoping to focus on mostly local issues and hoping to see people rise up strong under the impetus of a national crisis, if you will, although the crisis isn't new, and it was there under Obama, and the Democrats are trying to make the most of it and turn it into an anti-Trump number. But we're actually, I think, a lot of us concerned with much deeper issues, ranging from foreign wars to financial corruption and banksterism that the Democrats have no intention of doing anything about, but would like to lead the pack on diverting attention to, I don't know, Trump and Russia and things of that sort. And then there's also the difficulty of that I'm concerned with, that people are not really focusing on what they can do locally to change things for poor people here, simply by, as a start, not criminalizing them and leaving them alone. And I've spent many, I would have to say, thousands of hours talking about this issue and sort of repeating it. I was pleased to see on Facebook an entry by former city council candidate Steve Schnarr, who kind of passed through the Huff meeting the other day. Huff is Homeless United, a group that I'm working with. And he talked about the city council's latest meeting, and I'm hoping to actually get, at some point in the future, an interview with Steve Schnarr himself, but also perhaps some interaction with Keith McHenry, who co-founder of Food Not Bombs, local activist, international activist as well, who actually attended the city council meeting and posted on his website a flyer which sort of had a grim humor to it, in suggesting that the city distribute methamphetamine. Actually, it was a call to come to city council and pick up methamphetamine from the city council as part of their attempt to assist people in obeying the no sleeping from 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. law that is currently on the books and was endorsed by 5 of the 7 city council members last spring. And 4 of those city council members, I think, are still on the city council: Matthews, Terrazas, Naroyan, and Chase. And the 2 who voted against the sleeping ban are off. That's Lane and Posner. And 2 council members have taken their place who I'm pretty sure would likely vote to end the sleeping ban and maybe even other laws that criminalize the homeless. But other than making some, dissenting proposals for city commissioners, which happened a week ago, there's been no indication that these folks want to expand public comment or expand the rights of people in public spaces beyond city council in terms of any concrete actions. I actually had a long meeting with council member Chris Crone. I recorded it, too. I may be playing some of that. It's I don't know how terribly airworthy it is, but I didn't get any indication he was committing himself to do anything other than sort of nod and be friendly and amiable and make jokes and so forth. He did say, I think he said, he would be holding regular meetings with the citizenry, which is something he used to do when he was on council 20 years ago. With a much more supposedly liberal city council, the one that also sold the homeless down the road, or up the river, as you will. But I haven't heard any indication that Crone is actually doing this on a regular basis, or the other new council member, Sandy Brown, who I also sent an email to yesterday requesting for the second time. Actually, it was for the third or fourth time trying to get a meeting, but it was for the second, at least the second time, specifically asking for her office hours. You know, these are the accessible city council members. Not really the situation. I did get an email back from Mayor Cynthia Chase, my first ever email back from her this year. Maybe I got one last year. I asked her for her office hours because I thought people from Huff, one woman specifically, wanted Chase to take some action around homeless shelter, criminalization of poor people outside with respect to her. She's 70 plus years old and had to sleep on cardboard and then was rousted by rangers at the Freedom Sleep Out 80. That was the one before the last one. The Freedom Sleep Outs were the Tuesday night civil disobedient actions where people sleep on the sidewalk outside City Hall violating the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, the law I referred to earlier. Anyway, Chase did send me an email stating that she has office hours Monday, 10 to 12:30 in the morning. Makes appointments with individuals as they request. So if anybody wants to request an appointment with Cynthia Chase, just give her a call at 420-5026. She's actually giving out her direct number. I've always gotten the impression that Chase, though, unfortunately, following the pack with Cynthia Matthews usually and the other reactionaries on city council, is a somewhat, well, a friendly person. I've talked to her in passing. She and I had a sort of a butting of heads a couple of months ago when the police department, Chief Vogel, stood up before the city council and made the absurd claim that he couldn't release the audios and the videos of the police murder, I'm sorry, shooting, killing of Sean Arlt, who was shot within 20 seconds of his appearance. After a mental health incident of some kind. Speaker after speaker asked the city council to require, actually some of them were demanding the city council require the police chief to release the audio and the video so the community could see just what his fine officers had done. And he was also making the officers who had done this an anonymous person, so we couldn't actually tell who it was. Rumor has it was a woman, but who knows? Somebody in uniform with a badge and a gun, and either bad training, an itchy trigger finger, or just business as usual. Anyway, I became quite persuaded, and unfortunately, properly so, at the city council, the last city council, and which is pretty much still the current city council, would do nothing about this, would essentially rubber stamp Chief Kevin Vogel's decision to conceal from the community the identity of the killer and also the identity of, the nature of the video and the audio. He had some pretext about, oh, it's in the DA's office, you know, but I really doubt that he didn't have access to it. And there was a large crowd that was angry about that and were protesting. And, of course, they protested once and they all went home pretty much. Well, twice, I think. Once at the town clock at a candlelight vigil, maybe three times. Another time at city council, and then another time there was a sort of a let's all make peace meeting up on the hill at one of these churches up there. Or people essentially vented but then did nothing to demand or further pressure the police department to responsibly and accountably release the evidence that they have that will let the community know what happened. Concealing and essentially protecting the killer among them. And when they did this, I stood up and I turned my back on the council and spoke to the crowd and said, you should be talking, this is at the city council meeting, you should be talking, you should be talking with each other and meeting outside. This group of essentially police rubber stampers here at city council isn't going to do anything to assist you in this. And at that point, Cynthia Chase had taken over the meeting. She was then the vice a vice mayor, and I think Cynthia Matthews, for some reason, perhaps didn't like my speech, I don't know, left the room, and Chase was repeatedly tried to gabble me into silence or get me to turn around, and I kept telling her, you're interrupting my time, I have a right to put my back to this council to show it exactly what I think of its cowardly and its behavior that essentially coddles the police department, covers the police department, and covers up the police department. Anyway, so I wrote her a long letter after that saying, hey, I want you to know there's nothing personal in my essentially turning my back on you as an individual. It's your position as a city council member that I'm scorning and denouncing the behavior of, which I have a perfect right. In fact, I have a strong responsibility to do that as a member of the public when the council behaves as it does in colluding with the police department on essentially covering up its own lethal, murderous activity. Whether it's an accident or whether it's intentional, whatever it is, it's required that the community be able to see what went down. And it's now late January. We still have seen nothing. And most telling activists in this community, including the four people who ran for city council on the Santa Cruz, new Santa Cruz City Council slate, I think they called themselves, something like that, they've done nothing further to demand that this come out, although they made some speeches, and I'm glad they did, during the campaign. Still, I've heard nothing more. Still, I also want to say, as I said at the beginning of this tirade that you've just heard, that Steve Schnarr did post in his Facebook page that he was concerned, he was really disappointed or angry at the city council's refusal to address civil rights for homeless issues at its recent city council meeting. We got a note that the city council had a meeting a week ago, sort of a special meeting where they chose members of city commissions, and they did not allow a single appointment by the two new council members to pass. Actually, I don't know if that's entirely true. I think I may be overstating the case. I know that the proposed appointments of Schnarr and Drew Glover, the two other candidates as part of the Santa Cruz Four who ran with Sandy Brown and Chris Crone, the two winning candidates, were proposed for city commission seats. And not even as a courtesy did the council allow those voices to be heard, even at the commission level. So there is a sort of a, you might call it a local Trumpism, or again, not to overplay the Republicans are so evil and the Democrats are so wonderful trope or sing-song that you get to hear, and that unfortunately runs through the recent protests as well, although they aren't quite putting it that explicitly. After Clinton's Clinton lost the election campaign by sabotaging herself and attacking Bernie Sanders and the collusions with the emails in terms of the Democratic Party's sabotaging of her own internal, I don't want to call it democratic process because there was no democratic process, but the electoral process that created the Democratic Party candidate. It's really, you know, it's hard for people to get behind Clinton at all, or even the Democratic Party at all. So the Democrats have to sort of mask themselves as simply being anti-Trump, and then we get phrases like, oh, that misogynist, homophobic, nativist, bigot, all of which is true. But what's really relevant, of course, are the policies of both these regimes, the Obama regime and the current regime, are following and opposing those. And that is not something that I don't think Democrats want to get together to do, because it really means attacking the very central party apparatus that has given them all jobs and that they have chosen to support for decades and that they've constantly held out as the lesser evil. So, I brought along a few tapes, as I usually do. And I'm going to start with some discussions at the Red Church. Discussions isn't the word. Interviews is proper term here. And usually on Monday nights, I wander on over there. And then after the Red Church meal, which is where a lot of homeless folks hang out, I don't know if they still have the red ticket requirement that they were using some months ago, which is you have to get a little ticket, stand in line. You can only have, there are only 70 of them. I think that that has been loosened, but there still is a sort of a thuggish, Gestapo-like, that's a little harsh. You know, but there's a bouncer at the door who is still stopping people from taking food outside. And there are people outside, some of whom have not been allowed to come in, some of whom people want to take food outside to other people who aren't there. And there is sort of a, some of the members of the, who feed people there are, some of the church members do wrap up food to go, but it can't be done freely anymore. It sort of reminds me of the highly orchestrated processes you're seeing now in the protests where people are being sort of monitored along instead of the energy being allowed to express itself freely, which I think is what needs to be done. But it's never been a really a tradition in this town among established nonprofits or peace organizations like the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which I perennially call the Resource Center for Inaction, because it doesn't deal with local civil rights issues, but, you know, loves to take issues on abroad that are far away that I agree with, but that don't address the criminalization here and the apartheid here in Santa Cruz. Anyway, I'm going to play some of these interviews now, finally, and you'll get to hear them. These, I think, are from the 9th of January, where I left off a couple weeks ago, and hopefully they will still be kind of fresh.
We talked to you before. What should we call you? Just give us a name of some kind.
I'm just one of God's children.
Okay, we'll call you one of God's children.
Motherfucker. Just
all right. Motherfucker? I don't know
just
about that.
Just joking.
Oh, yeah.
So I really think that there's plenty of people around Santa Cruz that mingle with homeless people. I don't think that we are homeless. We are in a state where we are houseless. Homeless is a state of emptiness, and we are surely not empty. I think that it has been divided between the two. I feel bad for society. I think that there should be showers that three showers of men, three showers of women, and they should cost 50 cents to a dollar. We should be able to utilize them between a certain time. They'll take care of themselves. There's plenty of volunteers that would go and clean them or whatnot, because we can't get jobs or anything because we carry bacteria. There's no hot water anywhere. They have turned off all resources to hot water. Pretty much that's it on the shower. I think that the garbage around here, there is a lot of places where there's garbage out next to the railroad tracks. A lot of us reside at the railroad tracks. I think that there should be people, as myself, would go and collect the clothing and wash them and hand them out one for one. Santa Cruz should be have a $1 million shelter. Santa Cruz is very popular. There's people here. If it wasn't for the homelessness, Santa Cruz would not be who it is. So that's about it.
Well, thank you, God's child. All right, so we're talking with Steve Plaich. And Steve, you're just finished a bagel spreading, and you got a little something to eat yourself. You're headed for the bus to go back to your vehicle.
I am back home. We just finished the winter shelter intake this afternoon. Winter shelter seems to be filling up. We had 74, I think, the other night, and we had something like that this evening. So we're about three-quarters capacity, hoping to fill up all 106 beds at some point.
And you have now two locations, and the intake has moved over to the Salvation Army, I understand?
No, we're still doing intake out at 1220 River. I would like to see the intake over at Salvation, because it would be much more convenient for folks. Apparently, one of the obstacles to that is that for some reason, people have to be transported over to the shelter, but I think we'll be able to work through that at some point and maybe change that procedure. I don't know where that's...
Now, why do people have to be transported?
That is what I'm trying to get to the bottom of.
Was there kind lingering in the neighborhood?
I talked to Chris Montes. I'm sure you know Chris. He's day service manager at HSC, and he is our shelter manager along with Debbie Bates over for the winter shelter program. I kind of asked him about that the other day because I said that, you know, if you could do intake directly at Salvation with those 50 beds, I said I'd be happy to go over and do intake myself, particularly on the weekends when there isn't any bus service, because it would be much easier for people just to walk over to Salvation to access those 50 beds without having to worry about how they're going to get out to 1220 River just to do the intake and come back on a lift line bus. So, you know, it's kind of a work in progress. We're now 40 days into our 129 days of the shelter. So we're about a third of the way through, and it's still kind of a work in progress, but I think that we may be able to find ways to expedite and make it more convenient for people to access it. I mean, that's the whole idea, is to shelter people.
But as of last Monday, which was 2 weeks after this interview, as far as I know, the work in progress, it was still a work in progress. I always find this kind of rhetoric very annoying, if not sometimes infuriating. Certainly something to be smiled at and perhaps even spat at. But let's hear some more from Steve's thoughts.
Can I, you know? Yeah, you bet.
Excuse me.
So, you know, last night it was one of the heaviest rain I've ever seen around here, quite a while. And yet the shelter, you say, was only half full, or, well, about three-quarters. Full. We had about 74 people at a capacity of, it's 100, but it's 106 if we need it. So about three-quarters full, which is really, I think, good for this time of the year. People are just kind of finding out about it. We had six new intakes tonight, so while we continue to have new intakes, and we maintain the same people that have already completed intakes, so the number of people who are accessing the shelter program is growing. We're hoping to fill it up to capacity because, you know, as you know, funding is all about not only identifying a need.
Have you done any outreach as to why people don't go to the shelter? Because that might be a useful service.
It's something that you could probably do here. You looked at this group tonight. Of course, we're at Calvary Episcopal for the Monday Coffee House. And we serve, you know, 50, 60, 70 meals. There are 70 homeless people who will not be staying in the shelter. So it's an opportunity,
because
I think,
we have to be in by 4 o'clock.
Yeah, well, I think it's an opportunity for you to ask those people, is that the only thing that's preventing them from accessing the shelter? Are there other reasons why they don't want to? As you know,
you're there. Why don't you stand up and ask, for God's sake?
Well, maybe I will. But as you know, the homeless
have a form.
The homeless community is.
And as of 2 weeks later, and actually several years later, although the actual winter shelter program began on December 1st this year, Plaich has not stood up and asked, as far as I know, nor have any surveys been done, actually going out to homeless people themselves to find out what they want. I mean, who cares what they want? They're simply pawns to get more money for these nonprofits and to give at least a fig leaf of, we're so liberal. See, we're not very Trumpy, or if we are, we're less Trumpy than the Trumps, so let's all be happy. At least that's my cynical perspective. I would call it actually a realistic perspective.
It's a various community, just like any other. And so there are people who have their squats, who have had them for a long time, who wouldn't access a shelter program. It was across the street because
they don't want to be involved.
And I've talked to people about this very thing. And they don't want to be involved in the institutional aspect of it. They would just soon stay by themselves. They have, you know,
what
they need.
The institutional aspect, I guess, is the issue or the problem for them.
Well, people don't want to be with other people. They don't want to have to go through any other bureaucracy. They don't want to have to be bussed around. They don't want to feel like they're being warehoused. There's all kinds of different things. I mean
those,
you know,
four things sound not trivial, but like they're, you know, things people are just being picky. Whereas in the past, you know, you and I both know, we've heard, you know, you can't take your pets with you. Well, I guess, what's the situation with pets?
No, we had three people with pets tonight, so that's being straightened out.
Service dogs or pets?
It looked to me like they were just pets. I didn't see any service dog identification on them at all.
So, that sounds good. Now, actually, there's a shower over at the, for the first time, over at the...
There has been a shower at Salvation Army, and so that's the only one we have.
Starting on January 1st.
What we need, well, they've always had it.
Shelter began on January 1st.
What we need, really, is... Of course, you can access showers at Homeless Services Center if you're so inclined. What we need is kind of a mobile shower. You are familiar with Lava May, people in San Francisco who did the shower trailer.
Read about it.
And it's a wonderful program. I tried to contact them a couple of years back to ask them for kind of a schematic about, you know, how did you go about creating, you know, converting a trailer into mobile showers? And you know, maybe at some point we'll be able to do something like that. But really that and mobile laundry, that's what people need.
Of course.
And so the harder
access to stationary laundry.
The more we work on it, the more serious we're able to
do. Your campaign, Steve, for city council, which you've done three times now, you've raised particularly the issue around the sleeping ban and other issues around homeless services, more health access to mental health services, so less police officers shoot less people and
sure,
that sort of
course,
thing.
Yeah.
But there is a meeting tomorrow with council member, now he is a council member, Christopher Crone, former mayor, at the Pergolesi at 10 o'clock. Will you be there to buttonhole the man and demand he take the actions that he probably won't
well,
take?
Well, no,
but,
because I've already done that privately, and I'm also part of what Chris, you can ask Chris about this tomorrow, but he does have a council member advisory committee which met over the weekend.
Oh, really?
And so,
who does that consist of?
You can ask him and he can tell you, but it's just community members, and I'm one of them that he invited to be part of what they call a kitchen cabinet.
Uh-huh.
So we were there at Reed Searle's house on the west side. There were about a dozen people there who comprised this particular advisory committee.
Was Scott Graham present?
Scotty Graham was not there, and I was going to ask why he may not have been. But anyway, you can ask Chris about that.
He was an ardent critic.
And Chris also, you can ask him about his proposal to go out and actually walk the communities, not just in campaigns, but when he's a council member, to go knock on doors and talk to people.
Together, a tenant in Santa Cruz Tenants Union is doing that in the next couple weeks with Zob Hirschfield. Are you in any way connected with that?
Well, I offered to do a Voice of the Village program for Zob, so we're going to do that. We're going to help him out. We're going to get a panel together. In fact, I've been trying to get a hold of him to see if he wants to do it this Sunday because we had a kind of a sudden opening.
And I believe that program was done. The tenants together are actually, I think, the Santa Cruz Tenants Association or working group. There are two groups. And I'm not sure which is which or what they're properly called, but Voices from the Village, I believe, if folks want to check online, may have both done that show. I think they have, Blaich moderating, and also put it up for future reviewing if you want to check it out. If you want to find the tenants, if you look for Santa Cruz Tenants Association, if you browse for that, you'll be able to find contact information. If you are a tenant or know someone who is a tenant or hope to become a tenant and you want some information on how to protect yourself from predatory landlords, how to get together to make some fundamental changes so that there can be decent rentals in Santa Cruz, wouldn't that be nice? Check it out. I'm hoping to have some more follow-up interviews with Zav and Cynthia, both of whom are two, well, I think there are other activists too involved in this, but those are the two that I'm familiar with.
But Zav is going to schedule for a full hour live show on community television with a rent control panel to talk about those very issues, because I think it's important. So that much I can do for him, at least in this formative stage of his organizing. Yeah, we do, we can. Anyway, I got to go.
And we've been talking with
Steve Blaich.
And for those who want to get in touch with the, is it still a reality, the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, or is that merely a figment of my imagination?
No, I talk to people just about every day about that, so they can still call me at 466-6078. I'm happy to talk to them about it. We still have a couple of folks, Judy Berry, as you know, and some others online to try to help out as best we can, kind of navigate.
Comment on this.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll do the best we can.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, brother, see you later.
And that's a sunny way of putting it. I don't think that the best we can is raising a lot of people's hopes about lawsuits and then going nowhere, even when you have an attorney on tap, as Steve has had with Judy Berry. But Steve tends to focus on getting on boards of directors and writing proposals. And also public speaking, and so the gritty work on the ground. Often, I think the organizing work, and I have a similar problem, perhaps too, doesn't get done. I don't know. We need, of course, a lawsuit to complement those in other cities, such as the East Bay, where Osha Newman and others, Attorney Osha Newman, is joining together to fight Caltrans on a broad basis and demand they stop seizing people's property, as is being done here in Santa Cruz as well by Parks and Rec and police and other city agencies, apparently, too, if you want to look online and see the older Brent Adams video of a city worker stealing a homeless person's survival sleeping bag and claiming it's trash, which is the standard kind of rap you get. And again, this is, I got to emphasize, this is done methodically. It's not done as sort of out of, necessarily out of malice. It's, and that makes it in a way even, sends even more of a chill through me, because if it's done mechanically and robotically and sort of as a matter of course and as a matter of fact and as a matter of routine, then you can't, you don't have any human connection to deal with it other than by blocking it physically and saying, get away from that material. You know, call the cops, you know, pull out the video, stay away. You can't appeal to people's sense of decency or humanity, because they will tell you, I'm just doing my job. You know, and they don't really take it as a human issue. And that, whenever that happens toward any minority group, any powerless minority group, things looking pretty bad. Let's take a musical break, and I will be right back. And I hope you will, too.
Drugs are the best you can find.
And that was an old one from a group that used to play on the streets of Santa Cruz. Skidmark has gone to jail for that one. That's Skidmark Bob who I'm talking about. He's an old-time, one-time free radio broadcaster. Now, as I mentioned, the last show does Pop Defect Radio here on Free Radio. You can hear him or go online to find his Pop Defect Radio. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or you would be if we were transmitting. In fact, you're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz. There is some murmurings about getting an antenna up, and we may actually have a site for doing it and the technical wherewithal to get it together. We are a struggling collective. We have fewer people than we'd like to have, fewer people than we've had in the past. So if you yourself are interested in having a show on Free Radio or being a contributor to Free Radio in some way, well, if you're on the website now, just drop us a line and a message there. And you can also give me a call if you want to talk to a live person. I'm not an official rep for Free Radio, but I am one of the broadcasters, and I can pass on things to the other folks. My number is, grab your pencil, actually not hard to remember, 423-4833. That's an off-air number, 423-HUFF. The initials, of course, also coincide with the acronym for the organization that I'm always boosting, that's struggling along, or still meeting, in spite of weariness from some of us and difficult times for many of us. HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Anyway, yeah, the Freak Radio website that you may be listening to this on also has schedules. It also has some archives of other shows. My shows are archived on the HUFF website at huffsantacruz.org. But we need you to give us a hand if you want this show to be back on the air, where we have been mostly for the last 21 years. And that simply involves finding a site to put up a transmitter antenna. We think we may have nailed one down, but we're not sure, and so we're still looking for alternate sites. And if you have any ideas, that's where you might know somebody with a tall tree on their property or even a two-story house. Access to electricity and to the internet, and we will set up a little teeny sort of box on the ground, a 4x4 shack, and we'll be back in business. We also are looking for studio space, and that means a place where we get a 10x10 space indoors, hopefully, but I think we could also manage to build something if we need to, and access again to electricity and the internet, and hopefully to a bathroom. And we will be willing to pay for both those privileges. So get in touch, 423-4833. That's also the number to call if you have any news breaks about homeless civil rights, problems with the police. If you just want to learn more about the organization HUFF, or if you want to volunteer to help, all those things can be done. Again, if you want to get in touch with Free Radio Santa Cruz and you're not calling in for an on-air discussion, which you can do now if you want, but if you want to catch me off-air, it's 423-4833. The number here in the studio now is 427-3772, 427-3772, and the lines are open. And just in case you tried to call earlier in the show when lines were open, but I, for some reason, because I was scrambling at the beginning of the show, the ringer was off, and so now the ringer's on, so if you want to ring in, I will answer you, and we will talk, and the whole world, that part of it that's listening, will hear. So I was mentioning candidate and activist Steve Schnarr, who's still an activist in the community. I think he's still involved in environmental causes, involved in civil rights causes. What he wrote on his Facebook page, I believe that was his Facebook page, was regarding the rally, the anti-Trump rally on, I guess it was last Saturday. Yeah, there was an anti-Trump rally on Saturday, and then there was a massive women's march on Sunday. So 10,000 to 15,000 people, Schnarr writes, show up for an anti-Trump rally in Santa Cruz, and last night, that was 2 days or 3 days later, last Tuesday, day before yesterday, our city council rides that wave of defiance by increasing fines and bail for laws targeted at homeless people downtown, street vending, and use of public benches. And I actually looked at some of those fines that were on the city council agenda, and of course, they just called it a new fine schedule. They changed a number of the fines. I did not get to the city council, nor have I done a close analysis of those fines. I may look at them and do a little discussion of them now. The sleeping ban fine is supposed to be held down to $20, which... with court assessments, is now $190. The courts are the some of the major pickpockets of the area, aside from giving us unequal justice. They are also robbing us as they, of funding so they can support their own bureaucracy. It's pretty gross. Anyway, Schnarr continues. The city council also amplified the local partisan divide by rejecting qualified progressives from serving on various city commissions. I mentioned this earlier. That had openings, including myself and Drew Glover, who both received over 10,000 votes, with Drew only a few hundred shy of having won a seat on the council. This is not just about one city council. It is an example of why we need resistance against Trump to be rooted in a bold progressive vision. The failure of neoliberalism and centrist Democrats is the reason we are in this terrifying situation in the first place. To get out of it, we're going to have to aim bigger than a return to the fascism light of recent decades. To which I say to Steve, right on. Steve is a soft-spoken fellow. I think he finds my approach probably too abrasive. Although we've had conversations in the past, and he is invited to come on the show, all the more so now that he's no longer a shitty council candidate and kind of blustering around with that kind of stuff. I don't think Steve blusters, but I think the whole notion of this city council candidacy, I've talked about it being largely meaningless if you're dealing with a staff that is entrenched and that you have no alternatives to, and you're simply sort of trying to climb up the pyramid of power. And I don't see much point in it. I think the real power is to mobilize people as best you can independently of city council. So we'll see. Maybe we can catch him in a future show. I'll be trying to reach him. And Steve, if you're listening, or somebody who is a friend of Steve Schnarr is listening, let him know. He's welcome to be on Free Radio Santa Cruz, at least on this show. There is an article forwarded to me by the ever watchful Julie Schull, who runs a group in Santa Cruz called Santa Cruz Full Timers. The article is L.A. Crackdown on Living in Cars. And it's an interesting article which cites the new law that Los Angeles has passed, and I hope to have Peggy Lee Kennedy, who is an activist down there in the Venice area, one of the suburbs or adjoining cities of Los Angeles on the coast, where she's been fighting for the rights of vendors and the rights of homeless people and palling up with attorneys who have actually had some success in rolling back the repression, Carol Sobel, fighting to, for example, establish the right of homeless people to sleep at night without being arrested for it or harassed for it, having their property seized, although all these things still happen, of course. But the official right to do that has been taken away by a court settlement called the Jones Settlement. And then there's also the right to be in your vehicle has been somewhat sustained by the Desert Drain decision, some of which I've talked about on the air. And hopefully we'll be posting on the Huff website. I've posted some stuff on the Huff website about past court decisions that impact homeless people and folks who are poor but a part of the street community. You can find that at huffsantacruz.org. But this municipal code, LA Municipal Code 85.02, vehicle dwelling, states, according to this article, the following.
They became effective January 7th of this month, and they will expire on July 1st next year, unless extended by ordinance. The LAPD has indicated enforcement will begin in early February. Living in a vehicle is prohibited at all times within one block, 500 feet, of licensed schools, preschools, daycare facilities, or parks. Persons, however, may live in a vehicle during daytime hours in Los Angeles between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. if they are more than one block away from, 500 feet away from licensed schools, preschools, daycare facilities, or parks, and during nighttime hours between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. if they are in non-residentially zoned areas which are more than 500 feet away from the same four things, schools, preschools, daycare facilities, or parks. A general reminder, vehicles must comply with all posted parking restrictions, and of course, there may be the way they essentially strangle that attempt to use vehicles as housing, as many people do, for that's what affordable housing actually is these days for some. All vehicles driven or parked have got to be registered and insured. They can't be there for more than 72 hours. You can't park in an alley, and you can't have a vehicle without an engine, wheels, or some parts necessary for the safety for driving the vehicle. And there are maps that supposedly show people where to go. And then there's a listing of, looks like, 21 areas of different parts of Los Angeles. But here's the article that talks about that and says, the headline is, Homeless People Face L.A. Crackdown on Living in Cars, in spite of this ordinance. And here's what that says. A new Los Angeles ordinance, which makes it legal for the first time to park and sleep in half the city's streets, is set to take effect February 6th. Los Angeles's new ordinance on living in cars is billed as a boon to homeless people, making it legal for the first time to park and sleep in half the city's streets. But with the measure set to kick in February 6th, a new map suggests the law could trigger a crackdown on some of the city's 28,000 homeless people. I think that's a very small, it's an undercount big time. The map, which police will use to enforce the measure, shows only 10% of city streets cleared for car lodging. Other posted restrictions on overnight parking and oversized vehicles are not on the maps, but will be enforced. One Venice block inadvertently marked safe is actually a canal accessible by amphibious vehicle only. This isn't a street. I'm not sure what it is, City Parking Enforcement Officer Hector Chun said as he patrolled the neighborhood last week. Many jurisdictions have moved against homeless people living in their cars in recent years, with 40% of 187 cities surveyed in 2016 by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty having adopted curbs. LA's difficulty in finding places to put its occupied vehicles underscores its continuing failure to rein in its burgeoning homeless population. I like that kind of, oh, these nasty, out-of-control homeless people. They're like a bunch of cattle that are rampaging through town. In fact, of course, displaced urban residents who are being driven into poverty by the flight of jobs, the accretion of money in the 1%, bankster fraud, fines and criminalization of poor people that heaps fines upon them, and particularly if you're a person of color, makes it likely you'll end up in a cell one of these days. LA's difficulty in finding places to put its occupied vehicles underscores its continuing failure to rein in this burgeoning homeless population as it heads into its annual homeless count, which begins Tuesday night. I guess it began 2 days ago. I think the story is fairly recent. Voters in November approved $1.2 billion to build 10,000 affordable and homeless units over the next decade, and the city is planning to build on city-owned lots and converted nuisance motels. But for a second year, street encampments cling to neighborhoods from Los Feliz to North Hollywood. More than 6,600 vehicles countywide are occupied. And again, this tends to give the misimpression that there's this some sort of stubborn menace of the homeless who are being offered these wonderful plans to have all this money is being thrown to build affordable housing. Of course, that's the issue always is, where is the affordable housing? And again, affordable doesn't necessarily mean affordable for homeless people at all. Affordable is a few $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year or more. Earlier this year, Mayor Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles scrapped his timetable for housing homeless veterans, saying 1,200 remain outdoors a year after the deadline he had set to bring them in. The city seems to be resting on its laurels, passing a homeless housing bond, and meanwhile it has created not so much as another cot, said retired UCLA law professor Gary Blasi, who has studied and litigated homeless issues for decades. Garcetti's press secretary, George Kivork, said the vehicle dwelling restrictions are a stopgap measure while the city develops a parking program for homeless people. So in other words, they're going to restrict people first while they're before they've created the spaces for them to go. What this really means is we're going to kick these homeless bums out of town, but we have to look like we're not being utterly cruel doing so, or different lawsuit-wielding people will be on our ass. And it won't look so good at election time for folks who are not only maybe have a little compassion left, but are also worried themselves about joining homeless folks on the streets. Kivork, that's the mayor's secretary, added that the mayor knows current strategies will not solve the homelessness crisis overnight, but remains committed to working to solve it as quickly as possible. In other words, blah, 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 blah. The new law was adopted in November in response to complaints from neighbors sick of occupied mobile homes, vans, trash, and disorder at their doorsteps. It restricts parking by car lodgers any time near parks, schools, and daycare centers, and from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. in residential neighborhoods. The law expires in July 2018. I want to remind you, in Santa Cruz, it's illegal to sleep in any vehicle anywhere in town on any public street after 11 o'clock at night. That is to say, if you nod out, if you want to pull over while driving and you pull into a legal parking space in Santa Cruz, you are committing a $200 crime. If you do it three times and then don't pay your tickets, you're committing a crime involving a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And all subsequent acts of sleeping become $1,000, 1 year in jail crimes. Not that the city goes after homeless people for this in every particular case. They couldn't possibly. What it mainly is a, what they like to very kind of gently and discreetly call a tool for the police department. And that means the police department can use it to simply turn homeless people into gypsies and ruin their health, seize their property, and make life so uncomfortable for them that the hope is that they will leave town or, shall we say, be ground down under the wheels. Although I guess some people say, oh, this will help them seek housing. If you're a renter in town, you're probably familiar with how difficult it is to seek housing in Santa Cruz. The article about the L.A. crackdown on homeless vehicles continues. Every neighborhood council, every church, every community group you go to, people are concerned that people have turned the curb in front of their house, in front of their business, into an apartment, essentially. Councilmember Marquise Harris Dawson said as the council adopted the ban. One, I doubt it. But two, obviously he's getting some Take Back Santa Cruz type screechings and yowlings from privileged people in Los Angeles who don't like the sight of their neighborhood being trashed up with vehicles where people are sleeping in them because they have no place to go. And instead of addressing the underlying issues, and of course, one can understand, how do you really do that if at the same time you're trying to hold down two jobs and pay exorbitant rents or mortgages yourself? You know, you turn on the other victims, and you just demand that your city do something. And the city, instead of doing something real, creates new laws that criminalize the homeless and give the police more power. to harass the homeless people, and that is supposed to be satisfying to everybody, but the homeless folks, of course. Officials had said homeless people could park in commercial and industrial zones, but some commercial streets labeled available on the map have restrictions on oversized vehicles, tow-away signs, or red curbs. And Santa Barbara activist Peter Marin has talked about this in past shows, how he has been struggling with the city of Santa Barbara's contradictory and arbitrary attempt essentially to move all oversized vehicles using the oversized vehicle card, so to speak, or label to criminalize being in vehicles, being in RVs at night, even though the Coastal Commission apparently is putting the kibosh in Santa Barbara on simply banning RVs parking in Santa Barbara without a permit, because that limits access to the coastal zone, and there aren't really resources or facilities for RVs elsewhere in these areas. And the so-called public safety claim that's why they're doing it here in Santa Cruz and in Santa Barbara just doesn't hold any water. There's no real evidence for it other than the growls and yelps of the neighborhood bigots. And I'm sorry, Rochelle Narayan. I'm sorry, Cynthia Matthews. I'm not really sorry at all, but that's exactly what they are insofar as they act in this way. That's my view. Even some industrial streets, the writer continues about Los Angeles, are off limits. Sataquay Street near Woodman Avenue, a light industrial section of Panorama City, for example, is marked okay for vehicle dwellers, but signs there read no stopping 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Police are handing out maps and outreach workers are passing on information, but with a warning. The maps do not contain street-by-street information related to posted parking restrictions. Therefore, it is important for all persons living in their vehicles to verify all surrounding posted parking restrictions before engaging in activities associated with vehicle dwellings. The city has no digital inventory of its estimated 1 million street signs. A two-year $4.4 to $5.6 million project is underway to change that. Until then, homeless people will have to improvise. Harris Dawson, who heads the Homelessness Committee, said the city never intended to make a parking space for everyone whose refuge is their RV or camper. The lawmakers of Los Angeles should have learned by now that criminalization of the homeless does nothing to solve the underlying problem of homelessness, says Eric Tarz, senior attorney of the National Law Center. There just was not a scenario where we could provide 7,000 parking spaces, said Harris Dawson. The councilman said other cities need to step up. This is, again, Rochelle Narayan and Cynthia Matthews' continual excuse for not doing anything to change the anti-homeless criminalization laws in Santa Cruz. It has to be done on a regional basis. You know, so we don't want them niggers, you know, causing trouble in our town because, you know, if we let them have civil rights, well, let's let everybody do it first. We have to all get together before we can give them their civil rights. Well, I think that one speaks for itself. The councilman said other cities need to step up, saying Los Angeles is going to absorb a certain amount of cars. The rest of the city is off limits. Councilman Mike Bonin, who originally estimated half the city's streets would be open to car lodgers, sort of similar to Pamela Comstock suggesting there'll be plenty of spaces on Pacific Avenue for performers in these little boxes. And, of course, there aren't at all. It's driven away most performers, except on days when the police don't pay attention to the laws. Called the parking inadequate and said the shortage demonstrated the urgency of his proposal to open civic church and industrial lots linked to sanitation and social services to homeless people. A pilot program could begin as soon as April, but its space will be limited. The new parking system is a band-aid which is helpful in identifying legal places to park while protecting residential neighborhoods from becoming campgrounds, Bonin said. Homeless people and their advocates said the law will sow confusion and put homeless people on the run, in some cases from neighborhood to neighborhood. If they run us out of here, we'll be parking in the Palisades, said Jimmy Gonzalez, 51, who has lived in his van with his wife and dog in Venice since his release after a 20-year prison term. I know a woman. She spray paints her vehicle every week to 10 days, so the police can't say she's been somewhere too long, said Mike Greener, 57, another Venice homeless man. Civil rights attorneys said the law likely will face a legal challenge. The city has not fared well defending its homeless enforcement policies. A judge last April issued an injunction barring city police and sanitation workers from destroying homeless possessions on Skid Row without adequate notice. The new car lodging ordinance replaces a 1983 ordinance struck down by a Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals panel. It appears to be applied only to the homeless, Judge Harry Pregerson wrote in the June 2014 decision. The next month, L.A. Police Chief Charles Beck directed officers to stop enforcing the law. From the long history of being on the losing side of court cases, the lawmakers of Los Angeles should have learned by now that criminalization of the homeless does nothing to solve the underlying problem, and in fact makes it worse. Residents say their safety is at stake. Cassandra Weinman, a social media and marketing freelancer who lives near a big Venice encampment, said a homeless man punched her in the face and took her phone when she tried to report him urinating behind her apartment. Obviously, I'm sympathetic to the situation with the homeless. It's sad, but we do pay a lot of rent, Weinman said, adding that the street isn't a house. Well, there's such a thing as open bathrooms at night, and I'm not aware that such things are or are not the case down in Venice, but Santa Cruz seems to have the same problem, although I guess to stem the tide of urine, the city has supposedly opened up these two porta-potties along Cedar Street, one of them at Lincoln and one of them further down across, well, near Atlantis Fantasy World and the parking lot there. But then again, I've heard that different points these things are locked at night. And, of course, they are pretty primitive, sort of second-class, kind of like the blacks-only bathrooms of the South, where they don't open up the bathrooms at night as they should, have 24-hour bathrooms, as was at one time required by city council on motion from Pamela Comstock. I think one of the few good things she did at city council. But that was shut down quickly, or it wasn't quickly. Actually, it was open for about 8 months, the parking garage along Soquel Avenue across from New Leaf Market. And they claimed that it was shut down not because of vandalism, but because a homeless woman was sleeping in there. And their solution to that, because they had to call the police to get her out, was to simply close the whole thing up. This is the same mentality that closes the bathrooms at City Hall at night when the Freedom Sleepers are there, and they've offered, I think, quite credibly and quite reliably to clean up the area, but the city refuses not only to keep the bathrooms open at night on Tuesday nights when the Freedom Sleepers are sleeping there, which is the civil rights group that says end the sleeping ban, but they won't keep the bathrooms open often during the proper hours during the day because homeless people use them, and they somehow think that homelessness is contagious. Perhaps I don't know. There's a pretty severe bigotry program policy in Santa Cruz that has nothing to do with Donald Trump, and it has nothing to do with the Republican sweeps across the country, except. Well, it has everything to do with the ongoing gentrification of the town and also the failure of our local activists, myself included, to get together and take a united stand against this in a productive, colorful, and enjoyable way. I like to see Food Not Bombs does try to do this in some respects, and Huff has in the past, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but not so much these days. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back.
America, it's never been so great, but it could be if the corporations in control
gave back everything they stole, we would not be in this ditch. The whole country would be rich. We could have been the best, like the Norway of the West. But instead, from shore to shore, we are so homeless and so poor. America has never been so great, but it could be. We could have reconciliation in this very divided nation. We could have a truth commission instead of another damn petition. We could have a forward leap, but such things don't come cheap. What if we seize the shares of each and every billionaire? Oh, America has never been so great, but it could be. If we had elections that weren't just corporate selections between one fool and another, yes, if I had my druthers, we'd have a party, maybe two, that would have the slightest clue. This would seem to be essential in a place with such potential. Oh, America has never been so great, but it could be. If our treaties were obeyed, if kids weren't hungry and afraid, if class and race and gender meant more than legal tender, if it weren't all run by money, it could be a land of milk and honey. If we more often make the call to build a bridge and not a wall. Oh, America has never been so great, but it could be. America has never been so great.
And that was David Rovex with his YouTube number, America Has Never Been So Great. He's wearing a t-shirt, Make America Rage Again. I like it. Got to get one of them t-shirts. You're tuned to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. Name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. We're looking for a studio space, 10 by 10. We'll pay money for it. We may even pay a reward if you find it. It's just got to have electricity. It's got to have internet. It can be anywhere in the Santa Cruz area, hopefully more in the downtown area, but we're flexible. We're going to have to be out of this studio within a month, and that means we will be not only off the air, although hopefully we're going to get back on the air. We may have an antenna site, but we're still looking for one of those, too, just as a backup to be sure. We need a studio space. And so if you have any ideas, any clues, let us know. The last folks who pointed us in the right direction earned $400. And it's something that you too can make a little money on, probably. Although I'm not going to say for sure exactly how much we're offering this time, but at least at the moment, you will get the satisfaction of being able to know these programs are going to continue coming if you help us out. So there was a protest, which I missed most of on Saturday, where folks from UCSC came down, folks from Santa Cruz. It was a counter-inaugural protest. I did catch some of the residue, and I'm going to play a little bit of that. And again, remind you that if you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. So do.
For broadcast entry, I'm going en route down to the town clock down Mission Street. Hey, Keith McHenry, I just got here. You're about to leave? Is that the deal?
No, I'm getting more spoons. We're running out of spoons.
You need a hand?
No, I can walk with me back.
I'll walk back with you. So what's been happening in the protest? Here you are. I'm doing, hopefully, a report for Sunday's show.
1 second. Well, there was at one point about 2,000 people here.
And you counted 2,000 people. We're not exaggerating.
No, I would say it was roughly that. It was pretty hardcore. A lot of people.
I know there was a march from UCSC came down here.
Yeah, there was a lot of people in that march. And
Looks like about 100 or 200 now, maybe.
Yeah, it's like much smaller than it used to be. It was really big for a while, though. Filled that whole, all of downtown there with, but a lot of them are on Pacific Avenue right now. On Pacific Ave.
Any sense that this is going to,
spin out of control?
Well, hopefully, yeah, or even continue.
Yeah, I think it'll continue, for a while today, but I don't know how much longer.
How many people did Funa bombs feed today?
Oh, a lot of people. I have no idea what the numbers would be, but it's still a long line of people still, even now. That's kind of crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I've been coming back here every once in a while. I'm getting more.
Your van is parked about a block away from the...
Yeah, I moved it out of the area because the blockade was happening, and I was concerned that...
Say again?
Here, what's not working for me? I moved out of the area because that whole... There was jam-packed with people for a while. And I was concerned I wouldn't be able to come and go. So
you're feeding the meter like a good...
good boy.
...citizen here.
Yeah, so I... Yeah, but like every square inch down here was filled with people. It's pretty intense.
Well, I see the police were setting up cones on the other side near...
Ocean?
River, yeah, but near Ocean. Well, not at Ocean, but on this side of the river. And it seemed to me, I guess I got the impression it just started, but you say it's really kind of dying down, right?
Oh, this is a small number of people, but what's happening is everybody else is down on Pacific Avenue and they're building a wall.
Oh, really?
Out of cardboard.
Where on Pacific?
I'm not sure how far down. Maybe Cooper or something like that. I don't know where that was happening, but that's like most of the people are down on Pacific now. So,
but not 2,000.
I don't know if it's 2,000 still, but small number here, and then this whole area all the way up to here was people. And
we're
there
about
was
a quarter of a block away from the.
Yeah, there was a lecture in the, I mean, a guy on with a loudspeaker system, people talking from a loudspeaker system on a truck in the middle of the street.
Any plans for future protests other than tomorrow's protest?
Not that I'm aware of, other than the Tuesday night one at City Hall. And then we're advocating this. We realized that the best solution for the sleeping ban is to, we're going to ask City Council to distribute free methamphetamine to everybody so they won't have to fall asleep at night and violate the sleeping ban.
The German solution.
Yeah, so this would work well. We're going to petition the City Council to hand out free methamphetamine at 11 o'clock every night.
Well, I'll be looking forward to that, Keith. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't try to rob me. VH1 has a show that you can make the comedy. Judy Burke is in the hand, Tony Malady, and more family. I'm probably doing that sporadically. The only Gucci book is single with the water. The IRS monetary, and then you get the comedy. My niggas in the hood living in a fishbowl. Church of fire here, now it's not a shithole. Trendsetter, I know.
And there was a still up. Loudspeaker set up, a band was playing. I know it was a band, may have been simply canned music by this time. And the intersection was still blocked off. People were walking to and fro.
I don't know what to say here, but so here, I'll ask you a question or two.
Okay.
So, talking with...
My name's Vicky.
Vicky, let's move away from the music so I can... hey, Kent. So, if you know this woman?
No.
Not yet.
Kent. Hi, Ken.
Hi.
Kent.
Kent, my name is Vicky.
Hi, Vicky. Hi.
So, Kent, I know you're a regular activist in many ways, at least in the past you've been. But you, Vicky, are you? Is this one of your first protests or not?
Absolutely not. I've grown up in Santa Cruz, and I was here for the first anti-ban camping thing. San Francisco, Oakland people is a really big, violent protest. The first anti-camping rally. And then several anti-oil war.
Anti?
The wars from the Bushes.
I got you.
Yeah.
And you say you've been here for the last hour and a half.
Oh, since 10:30, actually.
And has it been dry, pretty much?
I mean, as far as rain?
Yes.
Really dry, yeah.
Just a little drippy now, every now and then.
And it was very inspiring to see the young folks from UCSD come down the hill. It was very inspiring.
I understand folks have headed up Pacific to help Trump construct a wall.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
In the middle of the city. I think they're trying to... I'm not sure what they're trying.
Tomorrow.
Is it for tomorrow?
I don't know. I know that when I was in San Francisco for the last oil war and drove a bus, you know, was part of the bus up to the city, that there were so many, millions and millions of people, and they never had coverage on TV, and FBI was everywhere, and so who knows what they're doing for, you know, to protect the people from the people.
Yeah.
You know?
Invisible.
Yeah,
it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It looks like a really young crowd here.
It is.
Ourselves accepted, of course.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very young crowd. Very inspiring.
Young person.
Well, you're not doing very well with the disguise there, Kate.
After the march came down the hill with the UCSD students, there was a very young children with parents came down from this way. It was really sweet.
And what events happened that people should know about here? I understand there was a lecturer talking.
Yeah, I wasn't able to hear it all. I was chatting with the woman back that way by the clock. They were in the middle of the street, and I couldn't hear.
Any homeless people with backpacks hanging out?
Oh, sure. In fact, I got a little raincoat for somebody.
Good for you.
Yeah, there's a few people around here I recognize.
Well, I'm running out of questions and probably have to...
Yeah, I never gave you a chance to ask.
No, you did. You put your oar in.
I just want to feel good about all of this. You know, I've been so sad and depressed. There's too many things to think about. So this was an uplifting event for me, personally.
People look... some people don't look... Some people are happy.
I'm enraged, actually, about what's going on.
Oh, you know, I wake up at night thinking about it.
It's just, I, you know, it's like, what is it going to fucking take for the American people to wake up and quit making bad choices, like, you know, basically shooting themselves in the foot by voting for Trump? I mean, to me, it's like we should have, you know, maybe Bernie Sanders, knock on wood, but it's like, even so, he punked out as far as I'm concerned.
We've been listening to Trump and Vicky. Thank you both.
Well, you know me.
I do. Somewhat. Thanks, Vicky.
Nice seeing you.
So, Una Bombs has its customary literature table. There are a number of scattered signs through the protest. Free Palestine, a couple of signs in Spanish. Todos para uno, uno para todos. Folks are munching. No more president. Kind of like that one. Not my president, love and rage. A lot of these signs are cardboard signs that are just sort of created de facto. There's an occasional dog or two. The folks are sitting in the middle of the street. What's happening here? Any reports from the protest?
Any people are protesting.
Will this continue, or is it going to be one of these 1-2 day thing and everybody goes home?
Well, that's a really good question. I'm really hoping that it continues. I'm hoping that something is built out of people coming out here today, and that it's an ongoing recreating event for the next 4 years. Until we come up with an alternative for 4 years from now.
Or maybe 4 days from now, hopefully.
Or 4 days from now, if people are willing to work that hard and move that fast.
Your sign says, no confidence in either Democratic or Republican Party, all power to the people. And how are you going to manage that one?
How are we going to manage, or how are we going to manage? Oh, goodness. I think that's a really good question. Well, I think that we need to start educating about other ways of going about doing our politics. I think we need to on the one hand, we need to approach our voting differently. I think we need to be bringing in rank-style voting in different parts of in the entire country, municipality by municipality, state by state. What's that?
What issues in Santa Cruz are you interested in?
What issues in Santa Cruz am I interested in? You know, I think that, you know, I'm really concerned about homeless issues in Santa Cruz. You know, I want to make sure that.
And we're going to pause because we have a live callback from none other than that man about city council and the soup kettle, Keith McHenry. Hi, Keith.
Hi, is this coming in pretty good?
Kind of. I mean, you know, it's a little tinny, but I can hear you.
Okay. So and I'm going to actually turn the vehicle off in a little bit, and then it'll be back to normal stuff. But in about 10 minutes or less than that, I'm half a block away from where I'm going.
Yeah, it's audible. The reason I called you is I know you you and Abby Samuel spent some time at Freedom Sleep Out 81 two nights ago at City Hall, and I understand there was some ranger harassment. I wanted to get an update on how things went for that sleep out protest, as well as the city council meeting where you apparently either were recommending or there was some flyers suggesting that methamphetamine was the way to go to help the sleeping ban.
Yeah, so here, 1 second, I'm going to alter the situation here, and, great, so you can hear me? Cool. Yeah, the last Freedom Sleepers action was relatively little harassment by comparison to the week before and the week before that, apparently, but the week before we had three, efforts to get rid of us. And they brought maybe 10 to 12 cops on one occasion, about 3 o'clock in the morning. No, 5 o'clock in the morning. So the first was, first alarm and one cop. And you know, the second one was, what
Keith,
was,
Keith, we actually, we did cover that on the air.
Yeah.
So what about,
so this
I mean, I'm, you know, I like the excitement and the drama of the police and all that sort of thing, particularly when I'm miles away. But, you know, what happened last time? I mean, it may be a positive sign that police and rangers either didn't come or were ineffective. How many people showed up at the Freedom Sleep 81?
Oh, you know, this Tuesday, we went through a ton of food, but the only people that stayed were about 20. And partially because it was cold. And there was, the Episcopal Church, the Little Red Church was having, the warming center. And it was freezing, but so it was only about 20 people. They had pretty good setup as far as being, highly visible and everything. So that part was good. And people refused to move out of the area where, under the awnings when the rangers did come. So it was like four rangers, tried to rouse people and, the assistant city manager was like made kind of a scene that she was very upset that people were, sleeping there and tried to get the rangers to get rid of them. But we videotaped the rangers wandering around, and it seemed like they were eventually getting kind of frustrated. At least was getting really, really super annoyed at our...
Now who is Wall?
Wall's a park ranger who seems to be particularly against the people living there. But the other rangers kind of murk at him and laugh at him and think he's like really kind of crazy.
Now this whole ranger attempt to move people along happened after 6 a.m., right, when the rangers had no jurisdiction to do that.
Correct, yes. Yeah, they come at 8. They always come at about 8:30. And then they hang out until about 9:30. Then they go around and tell people that they're blocking the sidewalk and blah, 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 even if they're not. And, and we just, videotape them and photograph them.
Now, did you spend the night there in a vehicle or did you?
I slept on the ground and boy, was it cold. It was terribly cold.
Well, I know that's in the past you've had some various neurological conditions that make it difficult for you to sleep outside, right?
Yeah, years ago I had fibromyalgia, but fortunately I haven't had that in a while. I overcame that. So
now, what about during the nighttime hours when it actually is illegal to sleep after 11, although they don't usually enforce that. But what they do enforce is the no being on the city courtyard property because it's closed to the public after 10 o'clock until 6 in the morning. Was there any, but people do go on that property in order to be out of the rain because that's where the eaves of the city hall are. What happened on Tuesday night around that issue?
They actually tried to get, there were two or three people that did stay out there. They kind of talked to them, but the people ignored them. and they just stayed there. And they never got rid of them.
Now, were these police or rangers, and did they come?
Rangers. No police came. Police kind of drove by and stuff, but we had no interaction with cops.
Now, when the rangers tried to move them, was that during the period of time when they could have given them citations and stay away orders, or was that outside that?
They could have given them trespass and stuff for being, you know, like actually only for allegedly blocking the sidewalk would be their only actual potential crime. You know, it's like 8:30. If they came at 8, if they were actually sound asleep, they could have given a speeding ticket at between 8 and 8:30.
Right, but during the night, there was no actual disturbance of people sleeping under who were sleeping under the eaves illegally on the
correct
city
not
hall
at
grounds.
All. The and only thing that happened was a first alarm guy came and I just greeted him, and he was like, "Oh, those people can't be over there." And I said, "Oh no, they can. This is the First Amendment protest." And then I called First Alarm, the dispatcher, and the dispatcher said, "Well, I've got to put you on hold. I've got to go talk to somebody else." And then by the time the dispatcher got back, the First Alarm guy drove away, and nobody ever showed back up until the four rangers came at, like I say, around 8 o'clock.
So you essentially dissuaded the ranger from trying to blow the whistle, although often when dissuaded the first alarm guy, when the first alarm guy does try to blow the whistle in the middle of the night, the police don't necessarily respond, nor do the rangers, right?
Correct, yeah. Sometimes nothing happens. I heard that there was actually, while we were having this leisurely evening, that there were a bunch of people got jacked up and trespassed around the library on the other side. But I don't know if that's true or not. But that's some people that came for breakfast that said that. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. And then we've also had, we had a couple of people that was really fun. So when we came up with this idea about the, and we're trying to get everybody to come on February 14th to City Council, but also to come this Tuesday. Every Tuesday, and camp out with us. But some of the people were like, you know, it's crazy. We like fell asleep in the lawn behind a Loudon Nelson, and these rangers came up and they said, woke us up. They said, "Look, do you know you're not allowed to sleep after 11 o'clock in the park?" And it was like 4 p.m. And they're like, "Well, why are you waking us up at 4 p.m? To tell us that we can't sleep in the park at 11 p.m. It was crazy.
When was this?
So that was like this week, apparently. Now the other thing, and they actually came to eat. They were gonna, when they were woken, they found out there was food at Loudon Nelson for people going to the warming center, but they weren't, because they hadn't signed up, they weren't allowed to have food. So they were like, "That's ridiculous." And I think it was actually Tuesday afternoon, in fact, because, they were telling me it was Tuesday night.
You know, there were massive protests this weekend where Food Not Bombs, played a significant role, at least that what we, I don't know. It's too bad that you couldn't get these damn, anal monitors to allow people to flow more freely. That was one of my concerns with the Women's March. But this, was there much a spillover from the two protests at the Freedom Sleepers? I mean, did you think that there was any kind of impact? And did you hear any of the speakers at either the Women's March or the anti-inaugural march on Saturday, the day before, refer to local homeless civil rights issues?
No one ever talked about that. No, not at all. Yeah, You know, it's pretty interesting. Yeah, no one seems to care about that part as far as in these big giant marches. Except, you know, personally they'll express it, but they didn't say anything with
and,
the.
And was there any discussion of you know, it's often gotten my impression that these marches are sort of Democratic Party anti-Trump deals, which are very partisan, that don't have a lot to do with, let's say, ending foreign wars or ending bankster fraud or anything issues that the Democrats would be vulnerable on because they're fundamentally funded by the same clowns.
Yeah, that would be my sense of the.
But what about the speakers?
Not the general strike. They were actually, a lot of anarchists and stuff were involved in that.
By the general strike, you mean the one, the Saturday protest?
Was basically.
By the general strike, you mean the Saturday protest?
Yeah, the Saturday protests all across the world were mainly just by, were mainstream community. And I think the one in Washington, D.C., I was reading like that it was started by the pantsuits group, you know, this people that started wearing pantsuits for Hillary, you know. And that's why a lot of the, you know, it did seem like basically the, you know, it was good that so many people were out there. I must say, but, you know, if I spoke at the university today and, you know, I suggested that, you know, students watch out that, you know, there's going to be these big actions you know, people are going to take advantage of it and try to suck you into an anti-Trump thing where in the end they're just going to be nothing more than neoliberal capitalism, you know, with a happy face later on. Or
did any of the strike folks from Saturday, you say not on Sunday, there was mostly that was kind of more of the corporate deal, but the Saturday march, did any of that spill over into the Freedom Sleepers on Tuesday? Or at City Hall on Tuesday afternoon when you and others went and presented to the City Council your meth solution to the sleeping ban.
Oh, you know, there's almost nobody there. And I thought there'd be a lot of people there because, you know, because there was a lot of disturbance around the fact that the City Council was refusing to appoint Drew, for instance, to the Civil Rights Commission and stuff. And so there was actually almost nobody, you know, the number of people in line was like five. And there was just a couple of people talked about some city official being racist against somebody. You know, that was one thing. And then the other people spoke about why, you know, how outrageous it was they didn't allow Drew to be appointed to the Civil Rights Commission. And then there was me talking about the meth issue, you know, distributing meth so people don't, you know, can be in compliance with the sleeping ban law. And then there was one guy that complained about the fact that white men are discriminated against. And that was basically it.
Interesting. I mean, I know I didn't get to the meeting before, and the previous Tuesday was when the City Council's commission, you know, appointments were made. And I understand Drew and Steve Schnarr were not appointed to anything in spite of the attempts of Chris Krohn and Sandy Brown to do that. Were any other appointments denied by those two, you know, who wanted to appoint some folks to different commissions, or only the? Do you know anything about
they
that?
They were the only two that I knew of, and apparently they just left the positions vacant. So even the business community didn't put up their own people for the, you know, just let them be the actual two positions be vacant so far, which I think is interesting. Kind of almost more interesting than the denying the other people.
Why would that be interesting? Clue me in.
Well, that here you had a vacant spot that you could fill, and you could fill with after two qualified people, and then you just don't even, not only don't, you know, if they had said, oh, yeah, we've got this other, you know, moronic right-wing person that filled the spot, and we'd rather him than these guys, but instead they didn't even put in their own people. They just kept, you know, progressives out.
Wasn't there a tradition that each council member is supposed to have an appointment, and I mean it's not guaranteed, but I thought that there might be some tradition that they're allowed to, you know, the preferential treatment is to the new, the council member has a spot, he or she has that appointment, and they, you know, then the council has to approve it, but the actual, it sounds like the reason there weren't appointments was because Crone and Brown did not have additional people to propose. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, I don't really know how that worked, but anyway, that's what.
Are you eating food? Just a moment, Keith.
That.
Are you talking with your mouth full here? What's going on?
Yeah, I'm trying to eat dinner.
No. Well, that's not acceptable. This is
no,
a radio show, Keith.
Okay, fine.
So, in any case, I want to thank you for, you know, talking even with your mouth while chewing. Anything coming up in the next week you want to mention for folks? I know you want the Saturday and Sunday Food Not Bombs. Presumably, we'll be feeding 4 to 6 at the town clock, or I should say, post office across from the town
post
clock.
Office.
And you're still looking for people to come and help cook?
Yeah, so India Joe's at noon on Saturday and Sunday, and then we still need help on Tuesday. I usually arrive around at least 3 o'clock and start setting everything up at City Hall on Tuesdays. And then I did the farmers market this week and handed out the, this proposal that, the city council is considering distributing free methamphetamine so people will be in compliance with the sleeping ban. And it was a huge hit. And then people I've noticed have taken photos of these flyers and commented on them and put them on Facebook and then shared the photo of the flyer where the city council is advocating considering distributing free methamphetamine to people so they can be in compliance with the sleeping ban law. And it's gone viral, and it's like huge. The amount of comments and stuff are just beyond belief.
Well, will you be pressing forward with your meth under the moonlight distribution plan?
Oh, I am supporting the city council all the way on their distribution of methamphetamine, because it really is the only way to for a majority of people to be in compliance with the sleeping ban, because as you know, and your listeners may know, you are not allowed to sleep between the hours of 11 o'clock at night and 8:30 in the morning. So if the city council comes through with this policy of giving out free methamphetamine in the afternoons and evenings, then there will be a lot less sleeping and camping tickets issued, and everybody will be all the better for it. So that's what we're hoping. And there's a suggestion by a former city council member, Micah Posner, that people start to write letters to the Sentinel and to the city council. You could also call them on the number that's provided on that flyer, which you can get at any Food on Bombs meal or see at any bulletin board in Santa Cruz. And the thing is to advocate either for the distribution, you know, support them in their distribution of free methamphetamine to the community. Or if you don't think there should be more tweakers, then maybe you might want to urge the city council to lift the sleeping ban. But either way, there's a solution in the offing.
It's a win-win situation here, Keith.
Absolutely. So please come out on the 14th, Valentine's Day. Bring your love and speak to city council and urge them to either, whichever, you know, it's really funny because I was going down Pacific Avenue and I taped the flyer on a window of an abandoned building. And just as Michael was walking up, and this woman comes around the corner in a walker, and she all of a sudden catches the flyer. And there's other flyers around. And she goes, "Oh my God, they're giving a giveaway free methamphetamine. That's great." She's like an elderly woman with a walker. And Mike is standing there going, "Oh my goodness." Because he'd already met us at the farmer's market. He said, "You got to take a picture of that and get that to me."
Well,
man.
You know,
I did
see the flyer on, you know, on Facebook, and that's one of the reasons that I kind of brought it into the studio with me. We're talking with Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, and also apparently Meth for All, a new organization, which I guess is...
Yeah, well, I don't have anything to do with that. I got to make that clear to the listeners that this is just something that, Park Ranger... Wall and other city officials inspired.
I see.
And we're just supporting their idea that free methamphetamine.
Well, you
know, will you also be
bringing sleeping bags on the Valentine's Day to City Council to encourage people to have a sort of a love-in at City Council for those who are, should we say, nervous about dealing with tweakers outside, given the success of the Meth for All campaign? Maybe they might want to spend their night inside the council chambers, kind of bundling up together.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
We could have a sleep-in.
Well, more of a sort of a hug-in, you know, or a love-in or something.
That sounds great.
Well, listen, Keith, thank you. And anything happening in the next week that we should know about, specifically other than the stuff we've already mentioned?
Nope, that's it. I'm assuming there's going to be a huge protest somewhere about something because everything's going haywire, but I don't know anything.
Yeah, well, we can always dream.
Okay. In the future, though, there's a couple of events happening with Vietnam bombs. We do have I'm going to be giving a lecture at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on March 10th. And then we have a really amazing folk punk musician, David Rovick, coming to the Resource Center for Nonviolence to perform on the last Friday of March, March 31st. And then there is a benefit concert for Food Not Bombs being organized by Franklin and the homeless studies community up at the university, which will be at Kresge Town Hall
at
9 o'clock.
We're getting a little far out there, Keith, in terms of dates.
You are far out.
What about Tampa? Anything new from Tampa, the place where the police were threatened?
The district attorney thought it was stupid that they busted people for feeding people and dropped the charges and did a lot of press about it. So that's been really cool.
So Tampa Food Not Bombs has not been stopped from serving.
No, they never missed a beat. And then because of that, there's been lots of media around Food Not Bombs, which has been great. And then as far as all kinds of radio shows, newspaper stuff. And then the other thing was that, you know, like we've served 1,500 meals at the, Disrupt the Inauguration Action in D.C., and Food Not Bombs activists did food at protests on that Friday everywhere, including here. It was like huge numbers of actions. And then Food Not Bombs is actually still at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest doing meals there. And
we're gonna leave it there, Keith McHenry, of the famous publicist for Food Not Bombs ever.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for calling in.
Only publicist. Okay.
I appreciate
it. Bye
bye.
Bye
bye. And that almost takes us to the end of the show. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM if we were on the air, but no. We are on the stream at freakradio.org. Phone numbers are, this phone number is still available for the next 7 minutes. 427-3772 is the number here. Here's a quick story. Police pressed over video of recent shooting. This is about 2 weeks old from the Chronicle. The police shooting of a man in San Francisco's Ocean View neighborhood has presented the city force with its first major challenge after outfitting officers with body-worn cameras, determining when the footage should be released to the public. I already mentioned the stonewalling we've gotten from the police department around the issue of the Sean Arlt video and audio and the name of the killer. The same problems are happening in San Francisco about releasing the video, where there actually are groups that are protesting against this visibly, or there were Black Lives Matter type groups, and who are having the effect of actually getting the police chief to resign. Greg Suhr, the prior police chief, resigned, and there is a new Fuhrer up there running the police department. Interim police chief Tony Chaplin. And Tony, I think, maybe a woman, T-O-N-E-Y, could be. Santa Cruz, if you're looking at the City on a Hill Press, or perhaps even the Good Times, or perhaps even the Cent Anal, the local daily trasher or paper, has been mentioning that the police department, the deputies are rolling out these body cameras, and the police department, the Santa Cruz Police Department, says in only about a year, this police department itself will have body cameras available, and Capitola Police already have these body cameras supposed to be, you know, keep them all very online and secure and accountable and transparent and all that, except that the public won't get access to the video. That's the problem, or it's not clear when they will get access. There's no guarantees. Like, for example, they're supposed to be for public records, and I've been talking about how police have been stonewalling on public records. I do have something, some good news on that score. Finally, the city, after a year and a half, I kid you not, of refusing to provide the most basic access to its police citations and arrest record, has finally agreed to allow me, if I have the energy and the support to do it, to go down and check out the arrest records for the last year and a half and the citation records. This would be relevant, A, to determine if there's racial profiling, because if you look at the summary of police activity, they do not provide the race of the people that they've pulled aside. And while it seems to be, there's no general pattern necessarily of racial harassment in Santa Cruz that's been documented with some officers, such as the famous Officer Barnett downtown, who no longer seems to be around downtown. I haven't seen him for quite a while, who actually was ticketing the black population at a rate of 7 times its occurrence in the population for, you know, smoking on Pacific Avenue and things of that sort. We were able to document that by painstakingly going through the citations, because police refused to put on their summaries the race of the people that they were ticketing or arresting. They changed that for a little while, and they did include the race for about, I don't know, 6 months or something. But then they stopped doing that. And when I tried to get the race, they used any number, 5 different pretexts, I believe it was, to stop me from getting that information. Most recently, however, on Monday, I believe, I got the word from Barbara Bush, who is our assistant city administrator, no relation to the ex-president's wife. She reported that the police department has said, I can come in and look over their citations finally, as though nothing had ever happened. And previously they were insisting I provide credentials as a journalist, that I provide proof I wouldn't give it to anyone else, they simply denied it flat out. They're still holding back on the surveillance camera records. I've asked to know where all the surveillance cameras in town that are funded by the city and whose video is retained by the police that are in fixed positions, not those that are being used in the very important drug and gang stings, no, but those that are simply spying on citizens as a matter of course in Santa Cruz, that we know where the hell these are, how much is being spent on them, how accessible and to whom the video is, when it's destroyed, how long it's retained, and so forth. They are refusing to even admit they have such records so far. They've been telling me they've been gathering these records since May of last year. And I finally said to them about 4 months ago, forget about gathering new records, just send me what you had, and they claim not to have a single record. It's really, it is what it is. It's both comic and a very serious matter that these police agencies, which control lethal force and can use fear so effectively, are able to withhold important information from the community and do so in violation of the law that they are supposed to be enforcing. Continuing with this story, however, police pressed in San Francisco.